Welcome back to the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. So in podcast 541, we're going to lay down a benchmark for election 2016. It is time to take a look at the polls. So I'm going to give you a primer on polls, and I'm going to tell you where the two campaigns, and I know there's more than two, but I'm going to talk about the two major campaigns and where they sit about 10 weeks out in podcast 541. Well, it's beautiful out there right now. It has been. We had a lot of storms this weekend. We had a lot of rain. We had a lot of storms this weekend. And of course, I know in places where the storms get going, you have high winds, you have hail damage, you have water damage, you have damage to the exterior of your home. And when you think about storm damage and storms, and when you think about exterior problems with your house as a result of weather, you need to remember who to call if you need help. And that is Cairo Contracting, because the bottom line is after these storms, you're going to have people walking up to your door, knocking on your door, and they're going to give you great deals on storm damage repair, but you don't know them. So you need to call a name that you can trust, a name that's been around for a while. Ed Cairo grew up in St. Paul in Bloomington. Cairo Contracting is a Better Business Bureau accredited business. They've been in business for 15 years. 612-702-2357. That's 612-702-2357. All they do is residential and commercial roofing, siding, gutters, and window repair and installation. This time of the year, a lot of people have late projects that they haven't been able to get around to because they've been on vacation, they're getting ready for the state fair, windows and window installation, things of that nature. If you call Cairo about window installation, you know, you can save a lot of money in your heating bill if you get your windows updated. So that last minute stuff, gutters, roofing, stuff that you want to get addressed so you don't have ice damage because the winter is coming, as you know, call Cairo Contract. They are storm damage specialists. All they do is residential and commercial roofing, siding, gutters, and window repair and installation. 612-702-2357. 612-702-2357. For 15 years, Cairo Contracting, residential and business exterior remodeling experts and storm damage specialists. They're the name that you know when it comes to storm damage repair and exterior remodeling, residential and commercial. If you need the number, click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page. The number is right on the Cairo banner. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. First of all, a disclaimer. I don't support or work against a politician, political party, or campaign. If you've been listening, you know my frustrations with this election and you know how I feel about it. Actually, more people are telling me that they actually agree with me and they feel the same way. And my frustrations are primarily that I don't think any of the candidates are going to get done what needs to get done, which is an extensive reduction of government power, personnel, and expense. I'm not even sure if it's going to get done in my lifetime. So it's kind of abstract. Some have taken my criticism of the primary processes and the political campaigns as being against a particular candidate because you have to be for someone or you're against someone, basically. You're supposed to get on the team and support a candidate if you're blue or red, particularly if you're a commentator. I don't believe in that maxim. I never have. But more importantly, I'm simply not going to campaign for, support, or fight for a candidate, any candidate. I'm not going to write any books telling you who you should vote for. Why? Because the minute you start that process, you lose your credibility and objectivity and your ability to analyze the situation. The bottom line is we are lost on the political sea with all the lighthouses that are supposed to direct us to safe harbor instead directing us to a particular shore. This is one of the biggest problems with coverage of elections in this country. It isn't all the media's fault, by the way. Every time I go to a political event or speak, people complain about media, and yet they continue to watch and listen to mainstream media outlets. So if you continue watching and listening, there's no point complaining about it. If you're working for a candidate, good for you. If you know, I hope you learned something, and I hope that you can take something from the experience, win or lose. If you are a candidate, thank you for taking the chance and putting yourself out there. Regardless of your party affiliation or views, people ask me, don't you care if so-and-so wins? And the answer is no, I don't, because I don't think any reasonable person can say that the result is going to be appreciably different in any case. And I realize that is sacrilege for some people to hear. But the bottom line is both mainline presidential candidates aren't going to substantially curtail federal and state power, personnel, and expense. There's just simply nothing in what either of them have said to indicate otherwise. And I think any reasonable person would have to say it's hard to tell which would spend more based on what they have said in campaign speeches and materials. Let us not forget that George W. Bush, who campaigned as a fiscal conservative, went into debt and spent trillions on two wars and also initiated the TARP. So this idea that somebody, because they're a Republican, stands for fiscal conservatism is ridiculous. But I've talked about all that. And there are podcasts available on those subjects that you can listen to anytime you want. Election Day in the United States is November 8th, 2016. So we're roughly 10 weeks away, give or take, depending on when you listen to this podcast, as I am recording this podcast in late August. And I will do more as we get closer and closer as benchmarks, because this involves polls. You often hear pundits saying that a good rule of thumb is that people don't start paying attention to national politics until after the conventions. Then they say they don't start paying attention to national politics until after Labor Day. And pretty soon they're going to be saying that people don't pay attention to politics until a week before the election. So that's a bunch of nonsense. One of my biggest problems with political coverage is the use of national preference polls to gauge support for candidates, where the LA Times does a poll, the most recent one, now Trump is leading Clinton. And so all the Republicans are super excited because Trump is leading Clinton. But as you know, the U.S. does not have a general national election. We have 50 individual state elections governed by individual state law. There is a general popular vote, yes, which is basically meaningless, and an electoral college vote, because only 29 states actually require their electoral colleges to vote according to the popular vote in their state. The electoral college consists of 538 electors who actually select the president in December after the election and obviously prior to the inauguration. And it is state law that determines who electors are and who they may vote for in some cases, although not in all. Each state's electoral college delegation is the same size as that state's congressional delegation, which means, for example, and obviously California, has the largest number of electors. States like South or North Dakota have very few. States like Minnesota and Wisconsin and Indiana are somewhere in the middle, 10 or 11 or 12 or 15 or whatever. Generally, political parties choose slates of electors, often chosen for their service and stature. There is no constitutional provision or federal law that requires electors to vote according to the results of the popular vote in their states. You might remember somebody voted for John Edwards from Minnesota in 20... When was that? That would have been in 2004. And somebody mistakenly voted for Dan Quayle, I think, at one point, or wrote somebody's name in at one point, and it was a mistake. So electoral colleges are not uniform, in other words. And I could go on and on about Supreme Court saying that there's no fines or criminal rules regarding what are referred to as faithless electors, although they can be replaced according to state law if they don't vote according to that state's rules. The Electoral College was and remains a limitation on direct democracy. You're hearing a lot these days, people complaining about the Electoral College. Some of the founders were very concerned about the development of factions, what I might describe as mob rule, not necessarily factions in Congress, but factions in the country. And so they set up a representative republic and not a direct democracy. Now, academics describe almost every country with a democratic process for electing their leaders as a, quote, democracy. And the United States is a, quote, democracy. But the United States is unique in its system of checks and balances, not just in the national and state governments, but in its selection of the president. So when you vote in November, you are essentially voting for a slate of electors from a political party, not for an individual. And people do not understand this. Who are the electors in your state? Good luck trying to figure that out. You can find out what they were in 2012, but finding out who they're going to be or what the slate is in 2016 is difficult, and you can't find it on the Secretary of State site. If you do, let me know, because I'd like to know. Again, This is a process that acts as a final check on the popular vote by the states. The selection process for electors is a party process, and the whole thing is controlled by state law, as I said. So when we think about polling, we have to think about polling by state in order to get a clear idea of where a particular candidate stands. National preference polls are fine, but they usually have a sample size of about 1,200 respondents. They're not necessarily balanced by electoral vote. They can be done on the phone or online. They can be demographically balanced or not. They can be balanced by party preference or not. And then they are weighted. So when you get in other words, they're statistically weighted up or down to fit into that stratification plan. And even then on a four-way response question, then you're getting into reliability issues with statistics, and it's not that great, even if the sample is stratified properly. And they'll tell you that the poll is somewhere around 96 or 98 or 92% reliable or representative. So when we look at different polls or trends, it's important to understand that they are not uniform in their methodology. And it is hard to compare different polls with different sample sizes, different ways of doing the surveys, different kinds of questions to each other. It's apples and oranges, but everybody does it because they say they're all fruit. So, right? So all the polls, we're going to average all the polls, but sometimes they're really not comparable. So to get an idea of how the election may actually play out, we have to look at the state-by-state polling data, which is even worse than the national polling data. This is my caveat before I do this. But here again, we look for trends, aggregate totals of different polls with different results. The other thing is, some states don't have any polling data, but they're also being called for a particular candidate. Some states, they've done polls in May and June and nothing since. You know, it all depends on who does the poll. In a lot of states, it's paid for by the local newspapers, or it's paid for by a local college or whatever. And of course, the campaigns have polling, you know, their own polling, but they don't share that. So again, we're looking for trends, and we're looking at aggregate trends of different polls with different results. So it's a crapshoot. So when you hear the guy on TV say somebody's leading, according to an LA Times poll recently, as I said, Trump just passed Hillary Clinton in overall preference, you have to ignore it because it's basically meaningless information. Remember in 2012 when all the Republicans thought Mitt Romney was going to win because the polls showed it was going to be close and he had an advantage. But it was not close enough. Actually, he didn't have enough an advantage. And I remember us being exhorted to declare that he was going to win the election, and I refused to do it, and it upset people at the radio station, and it upset my partner on the air because everybody was rooting for a particular point of view. The fact is it was too close, and I believe Republicans need to have at least a 5-point total lead in the states that are key, at least 5 points before election, because they're always at a disadvantage when it comes to getting out the vote. So it's a state-by-state affair. And what we're going to do is go through the states and talk about the advantages and disadvantages, not good or bad, win or lose. 10 weeks is a long time in politics. In 1976, Jimmy Carter led Gerry Ford through the summer, but Ford started to close the gap toward fall. But it wasn't enough on election day to win the race. But if it had gone another week, a lot of political scientists believe that Gerry Ford would have been the president in 1976. Sometimes elections are blowouts. LBJ won by a landslide in 1964. Reagan won by an electoral landslide in 1980. Lately, our elections have been very close. And this is where the pundits get this. The country is divided nonsense. On some issues, yes, we are divided. But I think we always have been on some key issues. And I don't think we have seen presidential candidates strong and talented enough to be able to close the deal per se and win an electoral victory or a popular vote landslide. So it's basically trench warfare. Or I guess you could say the electorate hasn't decided yet on a direction that we want to go. Keep in mind also, and I think this is really important, and you've probably already heard this, but I have to say it. Republicans are defending a thin majority in the Senate and defending a majority in the House, with the entire House up for grabs and the Senate majority literally depending on one or two seats. State-by-state totals are also important. For example, Ohio Senator Rob Portman is in a difficult race, as is Arizona Senator John McCain and four or five others. A recent poll in Ohio shows Portman up by like 10 points, so maybe it's not so bad. bad for Rob Portman, but the Republicans are defending more seats than Democrats. A major loss for the Republican presidential candidate might mean a shift of the U.S. Senate to the Democrat side or not. It could also be possible for the Republican candidate to lose and have Republican candidates for Senate and House gain. It's also possible for a Democrat to win and have a Republican, a stronger Republican Senate majority. It's also possible for a Republican candidate to win and also have a majority, or for the Republican candidate to win and lose the Senate. So anything is possible, especially when you get into these individual state races, and especially down to the wire, and especially in Senate races, down to the wire. Now, before we get to the states, by November, it will be winter, or almost. It's certainly in the northern part of the country and in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Winter is coming, so it is time to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating come out and check your heating system, filters, you know, to make sure everything's working right. You're not thinking about it right now because it's beautiful out there. The wind in the trees, the bugs, the sunshine, and you're not thinking about what's going to happen when suddenly the temperature goes from what it is right now to the high 30s. You're going to want that heat. And you want to make sure it works, right? I'm not telling anybody anything that they don't already know. Ryan Plumbing goes metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Yes, they do in-floor heating. Talk to him about that, because that's a great... I wish I had in-floor heating here in the studio. It would be great. Residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul. They've been there for four generations. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They're great for emergency service. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Okay, with the caveats that basically... I think this is kind of unpredictable right now, even though it looks more predictable, especially when you look at Senate races. We're going to look at the state-by-state totals. And you can do this, by the way, anytime, and you can do it while I'm talking by going to realclearpolitics.com or other sources, because other news sources have electoral maps, and it's just that RCP's is the best. And just remember the caveats with the polls. Just because a poll says someone is leading in a state doesn't mean they are or they aren't, because sometimes, and I will tell you where I see it, some of these polls were taken months and months ago. So there are no absolutes with the state races, even in states considered strongholds. That said, let's start with the strongholds for Democrats. For Hillary Clinton and the Democrats in California, she has a 22-point lead average over Donald Trump. In New York, Clinton has a 17-point average lead over Trump. In New Jersey, Clinton has a 13-point average lead over Trump. In Illinois, Clinton has a 25-point lead there, but the polls were taken in March and July, although given the fact that Illinois is Illinois, I wouldn't expect that that's going to go to Trump. In the state of Washington, she has a 19-point lead. Here again, the polls were taken in late June and mid-August, so they're fairly up-to-date, more up-to-date than some. But that one is one that I would not necessarily want to take to the bank. But 19 points is 19 points, and Washington is considered a stronghold for Clinton, in my view. In terms of pivotal states led by the Democrat candidate, so these are states where she has a lead, but it's not a huge lead. But it's impressive. In Virginia, Clinton has maintained a 10 to 11 point lead over Trump. And remember, Tim Kaine is a former Virginia senator and pretty popular in the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia. But Virginia, surprisingly, has been considered a red state. Remember that Bush carried Virginia. So it's pretty impressive that Clinton is leading in Virginia. In Pennsylvania, she has maintained a 9-point average lead. In Michigan, she has a 7-point average lead. Now, some of these leads are softening or tightening a bit, depending on where you're looking and depending on when the poll was taken. In Colorado, she is averaging a 10-point lead, which is getting stronger, and Colorado has been considered a conservative state. So for her to lead in Colorado is a pretty big deal. For Trump, The strongholds are noted on the maps as Idaho, Wyoming, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota, Oklahoma, and the Deep and Mid-South, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Alabama. In some of those states, there is no polling data, or the polls were taken some time ago, so I don't think you can accurately call them strongholds, but they show up as strong supporters of the Republican candidate because they voted Republican. South Dakota, for example, always votes Republican, but that doesn't mean that you would say this is a stronghold for Trump. I would like to see polls from those states before I'd say that. And they may say that he has a 20-point lead in Utah, let's say, or Idaho. But, you know, if there's no poll, there's no poll. So declaring it for somebody is probably, you know, an iffy game, even though it's probably reasonable to assume that a Republican state's going to vote for a Republican presidential candidate. Other states for Trump include Utah, showing about a 12-point lead, but the polls were taken in late June and July. Indiana, Trump is up nearly 9 points on average, with the latest polls showing a double-digit lead. Again, Indiana considered a Republican stronghold. Mike Pence, of course, is from Indiana, right? Louisiana, where he has a 16-point lead, but based on two polls, one taken in May, the other in September of last year. Louisiana is one of those states where you just don't know what's going to happen. It's considered one of the most corrupt states politically, Illinois and Louisiana. So I would say that one, I wouldn't call it a toss-up, you know, when somebody has a 16-point lead, but I wouldn't trust that. Mississippi, there is a 15-point lead for Trump based on two polls, one just recently and the other in March of 2016. Again, that is a Republican state in general. So those are the states strong for a particular candidate, and there are some states missing, and that's what we're going to talk about now because the devil's in the details. So let's go back to the Democrat side. Wisconsin. Clinton currently enjoys a 9-point lead average in the Badger state, but remember, the chairman of the Republican Party and Republican Speaker of the House and the Republican governor are all from Wisconsin. I wouldn't call it a toss-up, but we have seen polls showing strength for Democrats in Wisconsin that have not materialized, at least in recent Wisconsin state elections. In Maine, New Hampshire, and Connecticut, she has below 10-point leads, except for New Hampshire. Again, these are states which have voted Republican in the past. I'm not saying that they will this time, but I would not put it past them, and I wouldn't put these in a guarantee column for Clinton, although anything above 5 or 6 points puts her in the blue column with RCP, and any reasonable person would say, well, she's leading. You can't say that it's a toss-up. In New Mexico, Clinton has a 6-point lead, but the last poll was taken in May. So again, there's another one of those states that might be iffy. And the point here is to watch these states. So then when we get into the states that might be described as battleground states this time around, it's important to remember, I think primarily, it's not that they're battleground states where people are fighting. It's that they are states where there is no clear leader. And some of them actually are surprises to me. And you're going to start to see stories about it. Georgia. Not a good sign for Republicans. It is a traditionally red state, a Republican state, or a conservative Democrat state, the state that is home to Newt Gingrich, for example. The two candidates are tied, and there have been a lot of polls taken in Georgia. Trump is currently leading by 4. It's pretty close. So they're not calling that for Clinton or Trump. In Florida, which is really important, Clinton has consistently led by 4 or 5 points in what has become viewed as a swing state, but has generally been considered fairly conservative. Again, Florida is a must-win for Trump if he is going to win the presidency. You have to win Florida. And if you don't win Georgia, you better win Florida, for example. North Carolina, do not confuse North Carolina with South Carolina. Clinton has been leading by 1 point there. North and South Carolina, I guess you could say, are considered pretty conservative, but North Carolina is a little softer than South Carolina on the red front. South Carolina is considered a stronghold. It is the home of Lindsey Graham and other conservatives. Trump is up by 4 in that state, and I don't know if that's good or bad. Ohio, which is pivotal, and it's been considered pivotal. People say if you don't take Ohio, you can't win the presidency because it's the absolute center of the country and blah, 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 blah. Clinton is up by 4 with the latest polls taken in August. You combine this with Pennsylvania and you can see her strength, especially in Ohio, which is considered a Republican state. And again, Ohio, the southern part of Ohio is different from the northern part of Ohio, is different from the western part of Ohio versus the eastern part of Ohio. It's a complex political soup in the state of Ohio. Iowa is considered a tie right now, which is a bright spot for Trump, but Iowa has 6 electoral votes, so nobody really cares whether Iowa goes for one or the other when you're talking about Florida and Ohio and Pennsylvania and, you know, places like that. In Missouri, which has 10 electoral votes, I think, 10 or 11, Trump leads by 6, but in the latest poll, just by 2. So Missouri is going to be one of those states that's iffy. I have to say Texas, you know, people are going to be like, what? Texas? Are you crazy? Considered a Republican state, but Trump's average is up by 8. The latest polls taken in August are split between an 11-point and a 6-point lead. And, of course, Texas is the home of Lyndon Baines Johnson and has elected Democrat governors before. So I don't know, you can say that Texas is for sure Trump country, although he leads in that state right now. And that's why I put it in an iffy column for him, even though it's basically pink, according to RCP. In Arizona, Trump leads by something like 0.3, which is essentially a tie, although the latest poll taken in August shows him up by 2. In Nevada, Clinton leads by about 2.5 points. Nevada is kind of becoming a pivotal state because of a lot of reasons. And of course, you have a tough senatorial race going on there. In Oregon, Clinton leads, but it's close by 3 points. And the latest poll was taken in July. Obviously, Portland is going to be different from eastern Oregon, which is on the other side of the mountains, which is more conservative and more like the Mountain West. In Alaska, Trump leads by 5. I don't think there's going to be any question that Trump will take Alaska, but then, you know, you never know. It certainly isn't a 10 or 11-point lead. No polls in Hawaii, but Hawaii is generally considered solidly Democratic, or as my mom calls it, Hawaii. Polling currently gives Clinton Kane 272 electoral votes to Trump's 154. So taking away and giving states to either candidate can change the picture, but Trump has to win bigger states in order to defeat Clinton's huge advantage in New England, Illinois, and California, which alone has 55 electoral votes. He has to win Ohio. He has to win Florida. He has to win Georgia. He has to win Missouri and Arizona and Nevada. And he needs a break in North Carolina, Oregon, and maybe Wisconsin or Michigan. So this data is the source of all the speculation about the failure of the Trump campaign so far, which is why he's been shifting and changing his approach. And then you say, well, what about the protests, people saying that Trump's lead won't show in the polls? That's happening, and his campaign is saying that. We're happy with the polling where it is right now, and so forth and so on. I would give that argument a chance if we were talking about a really close election, which we might be talking about when we get to October, but we're not talking about it right now. We're not looking at close enough margins in state-by-state polls that suggest a surprise win by Trump. So if he gets a point or two because of people that might vote for him unexpectedly, great. But 10 points? I don't think so. So this is the recalibration of his campaign and his campaign style. This is the root of their change to try to win those pivotal states where he's really kind of in trouble. Florida and Ohio, places like that. And I said earlier when I was touring the Great Lakes region that you're going to see a lot of campaigning in Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and Wisconsin and the Great Lakes region, because that's really what it comes down to. It's interesting what's going on. You're going to see him campaigning a lot in Florida. You're going to see him campaigning a lot in Georgia, but you're going to see him campaigning in the Great Lakes region as well, both of them. Now, what could change all this? Well, national and international events could play into either candidate's hands. I think everybody knows that. If there is some kind of financial crisis, that's anybody's guess, since neither candidate really has a polling advantage when it comes to the economy. But financial crisis, it's hard to tell who that benefits. A terror attack, it's hard to tell who that benefits. Some kind of riot in a major city like Chicago or Detroit or someplace like that, or some kind of challenge to law and order or some sort of immigration crisis could benefit Trump. Negative information on one or both of the candidates at a pivotal moment could affect the outcome in these individual states. Concerns about health for one or both of the candidates could affect in individual states. Again, they might move the national polls significantly, but you've got to look at the individual states to know whether it's going to have an effect on the Electoral College vote. A significant move toward one of the third-party candidates could affect the race, but honestly, I wouldn't hold my breath on that. First of all, they aren't on the ballots in all the states, and they're not necessarily in states which are going to end up being pivotal. So I wouldn't hold my breath for any third-party swing votes affecting the outcome of the election. Basically, this is going to be about getting the vote out for both parties. So you're going to see a lot of efforts to get the vote out. You're going to see a lot of efforts to advertise and campaign in these battleground states like Ohio and, like I said, the Great Lakes and Florida and Nevada and Louisiana. It's about ensuring that elections are clean. Good luck with that. It is about suppressing the vote through advertising or other methods in places where it might make a difference for both sides. I hate to say it, but you're going to see that kind of activity. You're going to see fights about photo ID. You're going to see attempts to disqualify, certain types of voting methods on both sides. And it's about war chests and last-minute campaign and advertising blitzes, which is why you hear so much about how much money this side has and how much money that side has and how much has been raised here and there. So I will say this. And I don't like predicting elections. I don't want to get into that business because then people think you're predicting. Oh, well, he's your guy. You're saying he isn't, but you think this. If Trump is going to win, he's going to have to drive the ball from the 20-yard line to the end zone, and then he's going to have to make the kick in the last second. That's the bottom line. If that changes, I'll let you know. He is at a huge disadvantage right now because of Ohio and Florida and Georgia and places like that. A Democrat landslide could cause the loss of the Senate for the GOP and perhaps a loss of a sizable number of congressmen in vulnerable districts. If you live in Minnesota, one of those vulnerable districts is Eric Paulson, I think, in Minnesota's third. The other is in the second congressional district in Minnesota where Congressman John Klein is retiring. He supported a primary challenge to now the winner of the primary, Jason Lewis. So he is now going to have to fight through a bruising primary race to win the final, contest with, I think it was Angie Craig he's running against, and Miller was the strong challenger in the primary. So you're going to see there's a lot of that going around the country. Scott Desjarlais in Tennessee won his primary, but he's going to have a challenger. He's had a checkered past and difficulties. And so you're going to see a lot of these little polyglot congressional races. But in the main, if Trump's going to win, he's going to have to close and lead in some of these key states by October. And he's going to have to start widening it by October, or he is going to lose the election. And right now he's at a huge disadvantage, which is why they've recalibrated the campaign. So that's the benchmark in late August of 2016. I will come back in a month, maybe late September, and I will do another benchmark. And then I will come back before the election, and I will do yet another benchmark, and we'll see where it ends up. Don't forget, winter's coming, and you're going to want to have your heating checked. So call Ryan Plumbing to get that done. And don't forget Ryan Plumbing for emergency service, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs, too. They can get a plumber to you for four generations for emergency service. And getting your heating checked before winter, because winter is coming, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. While you're at it, ask them about high-efficiency heating. It can save you a boatload in the next 4 or 5 years if you have the time and the money to get that conversion now. And then, of course, we still have these issues with storm damage. But if you are looking at some final projects just before fall, outside window installation with higher efficiency windows for better heating bills, or getting your roof fixed so you don't have ice dam damages, or getting the gutters replaced, don't forget Cairo Contracting. All they do is exterior work for business and home. Call a name that you can trust and that you know, 612-702-2357, 612-702-2357 for storm damage repair and any late last-minute projects before winter comes and before fall starts, Cairo Contracting. Now, if you're a pilot, you have heard me talking about Alpha Systems over and over again. It's all about lift, especially on the final turn to the runway to land, and it is a big problem in general aviation because a lot of pilots think they can feel it. If you have a visual indicator of your angle of attack, the amount of lift that the airplane has, it's much, much safer. Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. I will tell you, their visual display is the best in the business. Bottom line, Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks, you guys, for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. Thanks for checking out the brand new streaming feed at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thank you for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks for signing up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter right there at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. That's all for this podcast. We'll check again in about a month on these polls and find out how the presidential race is doing. You never know. Thanks for listening to podcast 541.